Who's on our show today? Steve Kettman, who wrote Baseball Maverick, the Sandy Alderson story, who understands Alderson, understands the Mets, and is with us this morning. Steve, nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Marty. Great to be here.
It's really nice to have you here. And it's really timing in life is everything. And here you are talking about Sandy Alderson, the Baseball Maverick, and we had you on earlier in the season when the book came out. And now the Mets are going to the playoffs. How do you like that?
Well, I just think it's going to be a really fun, exciting series watching, you know, Dodgers, Mets, the way they match up. And, of course, I'm thrilled. I mean, I put 4 years into researching this team. And I thought coming out of spring training, I did not pick the Mets to win the division, but I picked the Mets to get to the playoffs somehow. I was thinking wild card probably, and you never know in the division. But I thought it was clear that Sandy Alderson come trade deadline, you and I both have, you know, known him a long time. We've watched him work a long time. And they had enough pieces that it was clear this was the year they were going to make some moves, get a few more pieces, and go for it. I thought it was pretty clear, but yet when the book came out with the subtitle Revive the Mets, in New York and on the East Coast, it was a very controversial subtitle, but it looks pretty good now, I guess.
Yeah, it looks great. Come on, you hit it big. You hit it at the right time because the story is yet to play out, and people are going to be writing books like crazy after it plays out. You know that if it plays out properly. Steve Kettman with us, the author of Baseball Maverick, the story of reviving the Mets, and, of course, the Sandy Alderson story, which is very comprehensive, and we know him out here in the Bay Area. But, Steve, Sandy sort of got in the middle of a couple – controversy seems to follow this guy around. And, of course, the Matt Harvey stuff with Scott Boras. You're close to this situation. How do you see it? How did it come down? How is it going to get resolved? And are there going to be scars afterwards?
To the last one, I don't think so, depending on how it plays out. But just to back up a little bit, any general manager in New York is going to, especially with the Mets, is going to have a lot of controversy. You know, Omar Minaya, who, by the way, made a lot of great, choices, including Matt Harvey, to build this Mets team into what it was. You know, he was a great talent evaluator, but a lot of times it was like when it came to dealing with the New York media, he was like the rodeo guy who the horse is galloping along and he's being dragged behind in a cloud of dust. And one thing Sandy Alderson never, ever does is let the media drag him around. He will jump in front of a situation, even if it means drawing some heat. He'll do it in an intelligent, thought-through way. But he knows. So, for example, when it came to talking about an alleged firm innings limit for Harvey his first year after Tommy John surgery, Alderson knew that James Andrews had never given a firm limit because Andrews never does that. You know, you talk to anybody in baseball, their targets is what they are. And so I don't know on the air how to say it, but, he called Scott Boras on that because that was clearly not true. One thing we know about Alderson is he was a Marine. He deeply believes in honor. He's a guy who, if you ask him the wrong question, he'll give you an answer that might lead you to infer something that's not true. But he's never someone who's going to directly mislead you. He's never going to prevaricate. He's never going to lie. You can't say the same thing about Scott Boras. You know, he clearly, I can tell you, stuff that was in the book that I know 100% to be true, he denied when the book came out. And, I mean, he's just not credible. That's the business that he's in, is building a demand for different players, partly through playing fast and loose with the truth. So that's a lot of what was going on with that situation. Matt Harvey is going to start game one of the playoffs for the Mets, I'm sure. He's going to pitch great, and this is all going to seem like ancient history.
Boy, great story. All right, you know, if you pitch game one, you come back if you need it on game five on normal rest, the way this this breaks down. So two starts for him. All right, look, it's an amazing story. If the Dodgers do what they're supposed to do and the Giants just hanging on here, how do you like Dodgers-Mets? How about that one? And does it matter who gets the home field in that one?
I think it does. I mean, Alderson insists it doesn't because he thinks that way. But with the start time, it's going to be a primetime game on the East Coast. So you got that weird late afternoon start. You got two amazing Dodgers starting pitchers going at home with that extra pitcher's advantage of the ball, you know, coming out of the light into the shadow. I just don't like the vibe of it. But you know what? That said, I think the way that the Mets were so hot and then they cooled off big time, and then now they've clinched. It's kind of relaxing. I like their chances of really bringing their A game in the playoffs. I really do.
All right. Well, look, a lot of people think the winner of that series, if that's the way it breaks down, will eventually win the pennant in the National League, because those are the two teams with the most solid veteran pitchers and young pitchers, too. I mean, Cologne and Nice may have a part in this thing.
Yeah, that's one thing when you talked about Harvey. If he goes game one, there might be some surprises in some later in series. I don't know how it's all going to break down, but I like Dodgers, the winner of Dodgers-Mets, to go all the way to the series. Yeah, because they do have such great starting pitching. I as a Mets person, the bullpen continues to concern me a little bit. Although, Clippard, you could imagine it coming together when it matters, but I think it's a little bit of a question spot.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, that was my next thought. What are the red flags for you? Bullpen for sure. We've seen that. What about the offense? Now, look, David Wright has come back. David Wright looks like he never left. And Cespedes, people talk about him being a potential MVP over 2 months. Where are the red flags offensively for the Mets?
Well, let me go the other direction and just talk a little bit about Lucas Duda, because here's a guy who, he had that year or two or even three where his future was very uncertain. I talk about it a lot in Baseball Maverick, my book, when they were trying to decide between him and Ike Davis, of course, who ended up here in the Bay Area. But, Duda wasn't really a part of that amazing run that the Mets had this year when they pulled away from the Nationals. He had back trouble a couple of times. But he's back now. He had a grand slam yesterday. He's, his rhythm is really good right now. And he's my pick to be an offensive hero of the postseason for the Mets. And it's great, especially against lefty pitching, of course, he being a left-hander. It's great to have all these big right-handed bats like Cespedes, who's, of course, going to make himself his presence felt. But I kind of like Duda. I think Duda's a key. Because if you have, what you're going to get from Cespedes. He's going to go up there every single time. You have these other players, the sort of, ones brought up in the Mets system who you really need some contributions from as well. And I think Duda exemplifies that.
Yeah, a lot of names that we're going to see in the playoffs. Curtis Granderson is back. Wilmer Flores, of course, who was crying in the proposed trade. He's had a nice season ever since that happened. Ruben Tejada Kadire is there. The catcher is a good guy, DiArno, and it's sort of one of those names we don't know about. But I talk about Russell Martin. Travis DiArno was the guy who came back, and then all of a sudden the Mets' catching got stabilized.
Yeah, DiArno came over in that Dickey trade with Toronto, along with Syndergaard, and everyone liked him, but there were questions about whether he could stay healthy. And then down in the minor leagues, he didn't stay healthy. He was getting hurt. This year, he had major health issues and has played half a season. But I tell you, he looks good now. And I think one thing about the Mets is, weirdly enough, they went from an embarrassing lineup. I don't remember. I don't know if you talked about this on the air, but there was a point in the season where they were batting guys at cleanup who were, 180 hitters or whatever. They've gone from that to where they really do have one of those top-to-bottom solid lineups where you really can't blow anyone off. No one is a rest for a pitcher. And I think that's really key because, in the postseason it's still different. That matters more in the regular season. But having that many guys who can contribute, veterans, rookies, a mix, I really do think that they're going to get their offense in the postseason, even against some very, very good pitchers.
All right. Pleasure to have Steve Kevin with us. Baseball Maverick is the book. You've got a new book coming out as well.
Are we talking Dusty Baker?
Yeah.
Yeah. In my other role as, co-director of the Wellstone Center in the Redwoods and publisher, we did the Bruce Bochy Book of Walks this year, which is a bestseller, a lot of fun. And Dusty Baker has a book all about going to see the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967. Mm. Jimi Hendrix was there, Janis Joplin. Everybody was there. Musically, it was, the high point of the 60s music scene, a lot better than Woodstock. And for Dusty, it came at a transitional time. And also in June 67, he'd been drafted by the Braves, young African-American. The last thing he wanted to do was go to the South. He'd have loved to have gone to Santa Clara and played basketball there, been big man on college. He liked basketball better than baseball. But he was the oldest of five. His parents had split up. He wanted to support the family. So we went, he played pro ball. and we know the rest. But this is the story. It's a Joan Walsh, you know, of MSNBC calls it a coming of age story, which I like. It covers those 67, 68, and a little bit 69 in Dusty's life. We'll have a few events in late October. The book will be out in late October. And I think people are going to really enjoy it.
Sounds great. I love it. You described it really well. And, of course, Dusty, a big favorite of mine and everyone here in the Bay Area. You know, whenever he lights up a room, you know that. When you walk in, he lights up a room. Very special man. Steve, I want to ask you about Cespedes. You know, of course, here in the Giants, you know, there looks like they're going to be knocked out here in 15. Within the next few days, it seems inevitable. But a lot of people talk about offense for the Giants, and I talked about it during the trade period in July. I said, what about Cespedes? What would that do to the Giants lineup? Do you think he stays in New York? Is what has happened here with the Mets so significant that Cespedes will stay there for the 6 year, whatever he wants?
You know, my gut feeling is probably not.
Really?
I went through a period where I thought he would stay. When I saw him say he had to have 6 years and make that statement when they were right in the middle of a you know, pennant run, I didn't like that. And what it tells me is, you know, to me, agents just have too much influence. I mean, you look at Cano and that deal he signed. Did that make him happy? You know, he would have been happier playing in New York for a little bit less money. But the agents are always going to steer their clients toward taking the best offer, numerically speaking. And I think if Cespedes is, you know, thinking he wants 6 years, I've been thinking, you know, we wanted a $100 million deal because, you know, there you go. It's a big deal. And I thought some other things might be possible. But I could see Alderson going for a five-year, you know, big dollar value deal. I could see that happening. 6 years, it just feels less likely to me. And you know what? I like the way you're thinking. I like the idea of Cespedes signing with the Giants. They're a team that will pay. And, you know, he would be, to put him in there, that, of course, they may be focused more on starting pitching. But
yeah.
It sure would be fun. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, it would change the offense. And, you know, I would love it. I'd love to see it. I'm a big Cespedes fan. Always have been. Steve, also you're involved, of course, with the Ken Korak book, Holy Toledo, and that's done quite well.
That's a great book. Ken, a friend of both of ours, is, you know, what else can you say? He's a deep person. He's thoughtful. He really spent time to reflect on Bill, what Bill King meant, what made him unique, and on their friendship. And he really put his heart and soul into that beautiful book. I need to talk to Ken. I haven't wanted to bother him during the season since he'd had some health issues this year. But we're looking at putting out a new edition of the book next year with another chapter from Ken. And then we may include a little chapter from Greg Papa as well, thinking about Bill as a basketball broadcaster in the context of, you know, world champion warriors. So we definitely see that book having a lot of legs, and it's we like to do personal writing that's not afraid to inspire, and that's a story that can inspire anyone.
Well, you've done well talking about all the things, so I appreciate having Steve Kepman on. One last thought for you. Are the Mets back? The Met magic? Are the signs there? The Amazons, are they back?
Absolutely. There were so many parts of this season where you and I both know it. You're watching a team and you feel like the whole thing just collapsed.
Yeah.
It's done. This is too ugly. That horrible loss, horrible losing streak. And something kept bouncing back with this team. I'd compare it to the magic of the Giants, you know, last season and two seasons ago. Something just kind of uncanny. And the other thing is they've built up a farm system. You know, DePodesta gets a lot of credit for that, Sandy Alderson. But they've got a lot of depth. They can continue to make moves and deals. These young pitchers, you know, they talk about innings limits. Well, that'll be mostly out the window by next year. You got Zach Wheeler coming back. I think there's a lot of reasons to think that the Mets are going to be in the playoff mix for a lot of years to come.
Yeah, a lot of people say they remind them of the 2010 Giants going into the playoff, the way the Giants just, the pitching took over and they hit the Phillies in the jaw. They never knew what hit them. They may do that to the Dodgers.
I think so. I kind of, as much as I hate to say it, I kind of feel like it might be a one-sided series either way.
All right. Nice to have you with us. Always good to have you in the Bay Area, Steve Kettman. And let us know how things are, and we'll follow this Mets story. Who knows? We may have you on again. Thank you.
Sounds good, Marty. Thank you.
All right. That is Steve Kettman. Baseball Maverick is the book. Hit it right, didn't he?